From the First Midwest Bank State Street Studio, this is WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago.
This is the home of the White Sox.
ESPN 1000. ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie. Watch us and join the chat. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on Twitch.tv or the Twitch app.
Gideon begged for that to be played, too. He wanted to know before the show. He tweeted. He goes,
begging
"Are you guys going
to
be playing?
Not be played.
Yeah. Are you guys going to play my song?" Oh, boy.
I beg you not to play it.
ESPNParody.com. If you've got a great, great Bear song, send it. If it's not great and over the top, there has been a little bit of fatigue for a lot of the Fire Nagy, Fire Pace, they all suck songs. And we got one about my boobs yesterday.
Very good one.
Yeah, very good one.
Yeah.
We received a couple of other really good ones, too.
Yeah.
Like, someone did a song about just the taste of it. And
it's fantastic.
Like it, love it, just fantastic. The taste of it. Very inside, but that's what we like sometimes, too. There's been a good Scottie Pippen one. There's been a good Alex Caruso one. There's still been some good Bears ones. But it's wide open, topic-wise. To get us your songs. Dan Weeder is enjoying another day in Bearsland today as they open things up and they get set for the Arizona Cardinals. But who will play quarterback for the Bears? I think that is the major question as Dan from the Chicago Tribune joins us on the Corona Hotline. Hi, Dan. How you feeling today?
Dan, you said enjoying another day in Bearsland, and Waddle just instinctively started laughing out loud.
Yes, yes. He could detect my sarcasm, too.
Of course.
Yeah. It's the dog days right now, is it not?
Well, it's the insanity of it is we've reached a point that usually comes when there's like two or three games left, and then you look down at the calendar and you realize there's six of these left. And a long way to go, and you think, boy, what can happen between now and then, and how much do we have to stay buckled in?
So what is the quarterback situation as we speak today?
Okay, so some updates for you. Andy is taking the starter's reps today in practice. Justin was out there during the portion of practice that was open to us media members to view. Justin looked all right. He looked better than I thought he would look. He was moving around pretty good. Making some throws on the move, did not seem to be wincing in any sort of discomfort. So positive signs that his recovery is progressing in the right direction. And now I think for them, it's just a matter of kind of feeling out how he responds to this day of practice, where his pain tolerance is, and can they put him out there safely on Sunday to continue the developmental process with him, or do you want to stick with Andy? So there's a couple more days in the week that they have a chance to decide things. But again, Justin looked better to my eyes today than I expected him to.
To me, I think this is more nuanced than others. Like, Waddle and I had a debate last week, and I think we could get into it again, where a lot of people simply go, if he's cleared to play, he should play. But Mitch Trubisky was cleared to play with his left shoulder in a harness. Was it a harness that he wore?
Yeah, his left shoulder was in a harness.
In a harness for, I think, one or two years. Two different times. Now, he was cleared, and they were trying to win, but it certainly did help. With the Bears out of it and with them trying to develop him in the right way, if he's cleared but playing in discomfort, do you pull him back for another week until he's closer to 100%?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the significance of the discomfort, right? Like, you have to learn to play through some form of discomfort. Now, if it's significant enough where it's impacting your decision-making, it's impacting your movement, it's impacting the way you throw the football, then there's really no point in forcing the issue, like you said, at 4-7 and really not playing for anything in 2021. But if there's a chance for him to go out there and feel a little bit of discomfort and grow and learn from seeing defenses and get some more experience and add to that library so that as he goes forward, that growth process can go up, then absolutely you take advantage of every opportunity you can.
Update on other guys. Roquan wasn't available today, correct? Were any of the other guys, how about Allen Robinson?
No Allen Robinson out there either. And so, again, look, I think the writing is starting to be on the wall for Allen Robinson's future in Chicago. And, you know, this is now a month, I think, since he suffered that hamstring injury in Pittsburgh. and he's not back out there, and he's got every incentive to not be out there until he feels 120%, right? And so we'll see where that goes as the week progresses. Akeem Hicks still not back. Again, yeah, like you said, Roquan not out there. And so you're talking about going to play a really good Arizona Cardinals team that's rested, coming off its bye week, playing for the top seed in the NFC, and you're going out pretty significantly shorthanded in a lot of areas.
All right, now that we got that out of the way, yeah. Where are we big picture-wise here with the Bears, with the coach, with the general manager? What do you know?
What do you want to know? I mean, it's a state of disarray. I can tell you that there's expectations elsewhere in the league that there is at least going to be some form of significant change before the season ends, potentially, when the season ends for sure. And now it's just a matter of how far that change stretches and what they want to do to put themselves in position to address it all. There are a long list of candidates as both general managers and head coaches who are lining up their resumes, getting ready to drop them in the mailbox so that they can be read by whoever's making the decisions at Hallis Hall. And I know it's always a hot topic on whether this job is attractive. The craziest part of discussions you have with people around the league is there is this widespread acknowledgement of the dysfunction and the major hurdles and the messes that are constantly occurring at Hallis Hall. And yet in the same conversations, everyone says at the drop of a hat, they would sign up to take this job because they know what the potential of this place is. And so it's really pretty fascinating to see how this is going to play out in the next month and a half.
You said it's still in limbo. So you believe there could be a firing still before the end of the season that involves Matt Nagy?
Well, look, there are new rules in place this year where you can now interview the assistant coaches of other teams, you know, in the last 2 weeks of the regular season. It was a change made so that these assistant coaches didn't have to be preparing for future jobs while they're trying to get ready for very important playoff games. And so if you want to get in on the earliest stages of those interviews and there's a candidate that you like that you expect to play deep into the playoffs and you want to get that interview process going a lot earlier, there's some incentive to letting your guy go and then reaching out. But now the other part of that question is who is exactly doing that, right? And so now that's where the mess of everything that's going on in Lake Forest needs to sort itself out before you can even have direction on where you're going with any of this, because in order to proceed in those types of interviews in the last weeks of the regular season, that means you're probably saying that Ryan Pace is going to proceed over the coach hiring, right? And I don't think that will go over very well in the city of Chicago.
Well, think about it, not just that. How's that going to go over with the candidate that you bring in? Okay, so correct, you fire Matt Nagy, and Ryan Pace is still in his role as general manager, and you bring in Eric Bieniemy. Let's just play this out. To interview him, well, first of all, why am I going to trust that Ryan's going to make the right hire? And if you're Eric Bieniemy and his representation, what are you thinking about a team that is interviewing you without knowing that the general manager is actually going to be in place? Like, so I get it. If you fire your guy, but you have tremendous confidence in your front office and stability in your front office, and you view your situation as just a coaching situation, this new rule may help you. But from our seats here, I think all three of us, it goes beyond the coach. So that whole situation, in my mind, that advantageous environment of being able to interview these guys in weeks 16 and 17 and 18 goes out the window.
It's why he's got to be doing his research now on presidents or general managers.
That's why I'm saying
minute of every day that research needs to be being done because of the state that they're in. And it's scary because they're about to enter a phase, as we've talked about here, that is going to be direction-altering for many, many years going forward for this franchise. And you need to go into that process having confidence in the people that are making those decisions. No one in the outside world outside of Hallis Hall currently has confidence in any of the people making decisions inside of Hallis Hall. And that is a terrible place to be in as a franchise. It's a place that I think we all forecasted was possible, you know, last January 13th when they held that Zoom conference that I continually bring up, because the rest of the world said, oh, my God, this is a total illumination of how directionless and clueless they are in terms of what they're actually trying to accomplish and look for. And yet here we are now in this state at 4-7, having these very passionate conversations about an organization that's got to get things fixed without much outside confidence that they can get them fixed.
I will say this, Dan, to the statement you made earlier about the attractiveness of this position.
Yeah.
I can make a case that this, as long as George decides he's going to completely restructure what's going on, he's going to bring in a new president, and then they're going to bring in a new general manager, and then those guys are going to hire the new coach. Mm-hmm. I can paint you a picture where this destination is a really good one.
Yeah.
Now, again, I know you're currently your roster's aged. and you don't have a ton of salary cap space, but you're going to get a new building at some point. You do have the ability. You have a young quarterback that many people believe is going to be your answer at the most important position. I can paint you a picture where this is a desirable destination as long as the two guys above the coach are actually replaced with new sets of eyes and ears.
Well, and you don't have to paint that picture very vividly for people on the outside to believe that. I ask people all the time to reconcile their recognition of all the flaws that are you know, internal inside House Hall and all the things that go wrong in Lake Forest, and reconcile that with the attractiveness of the job. And they start with world-class city, iconic franchise, right? Fan base that's second to none, a track record when they're successful of having this city come alive in a way that not a lot of cities come alive when a football team is playing really well. And so there's this magnetic force with all those things that say, man, this would be really cool. And you got to remember that all these people that apply for these positions are highly confident type A people that believe that they can fix problems, right? And that they can be part of the solution. And if you look at it through that lens and say, I can go in there and succeed. Well, if I succeed in this place that's so itching for success, oh my God, the spoils will be endless. And so that part of things really, really is attractive to a lot of different people. And that's why I say it's not going to be a job that's super difficult for them to sell to outsiders, because it'll be there. And look, when you look at some of the other jobs that may come open, both from a head coaching standpoint and a general manager standpoint in this offseason, there's not a lot of other ones where you say guys are going to be racing to make that their number one destination.
Hey, Dan, there's a couple more questions I have for you. So hang in there, because I want to circle back to, does George meddle? And going back into how the Bears named Justin Fields the starting quarterback, I hear you chuckle. I look forward to your answer. Also, the Matt Nagy chance and how Eddie Jackson responded and how ugly it's gotten in the city of Chicago. We continue our conversation with Dan Weiderer coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Don't forget, we're out and about again at the Howard Street Inn this Friday. Come on out and see us. It's in Niles, 6700 West Howard Street. It's all brought to you by Miller Lite. This Friday, we're back at the Howard Street Inn. Come out and see your buddies Waddle and Sylvie broadcast live. Dan Weiderer continues to join us right now. And let's go. I'd like the big picture talk rather than dissecting a game against Arizona for a 4-17.
Bears and Cardinals.
The reports, Cap's been yelling about it. George is the one who changed the quarterback from the Monday to the Wednesday. The George, whether it's through a second party or went directly to the coach, that the reason why Matt Nagy went from his plan to Andy Dalton to Justin Fields was because of the owner. And in these big pictures conversations, does the owner meddle in football decisions or does he not? So how will you address this?
All right, let's start with some questions back at you, and we'll try to work through this.
All right, answering questions with questions. I love it.
Yeah, I say we get in like the Bill and Ted's time machine and go back to October 6th, right? That is the day, the Wednesday of week 5. You guys were getting ready for that raucous trip to Las Vegas. Everything was still warm out in the city. Everyone was feeling good. We're right back there, right, in that moment. So why at that point in time is George McCaskey feeling any sort of urgency to do anything with the quarterback position? Help me understand that.
He's not.
Okay. So at that point in time, Justin Fields has already made two starts out of necessity because Andy's dealing with a knee injury, correct? And so he's already played two games. You have just beaten the Detroit Lions the previous weekend, and you are now 2-2, and nothing in your season has gone the way, you know, it's gone exactly as everyone expected. Everyone expected 2-2. We talked about it for months. They're going to be 2-2. What happens from there is anyone's guess. So why at that point does George McCaskey, who for months, for years, for decades, has basically let the people in his positions of power run with basically free rein to do their jobs without any interference, suddenly torpedoing his general manager, confronting his head coach, and telling him right now, without question, you have to start the rookie quarterback for the rest of the year?
Can I answer? George,
yeah, please.
George,
try.
George acts like a fan, and like me as a fan, I said the boat has left the harbor, and you can't bring it back now, and we're off and running with Justin Fields, and the coach keeps saying that, and we're going to waste time now if we go back to Andy Dalton at 2-2. Let's try to win and develop at the same time.
But George has never done that. Why now?
Yeah, you're in a conspiracy world. Conspiracy theory world, if you were inserting George in those conversations that you're talking about were had. They were had first amongst the coaching staff, right? A coaching staff that saw that Justin came back from an absolute disaster in Cleveland and steadied himself within a matter of hours and got himself ready to play winning football in his second start against the Lions in a way that elevated the confidence in the building that no matter how pronounced the struggles get for this kid in his rookie year, he is built to handle this. And so if he's built to handle this, let's try to get his experience levels up. There was back and forth. There was pushback. There were conversations. There was, you know, arguments at times. It ultimately resulted in the decision on Wednesday of week 5, while you guys were getting ready for that fantastic trip to Vegas, to say, let's go. Let's
this put is typical Matt Nagy behavior, too, isn't it, Dan? Like, I mean, nothing is ever kind of systematically follows any type of rhyme or reason. Like, it's a little bit over here, a little bit over there. Ooh, that play looks good. Why don't we run this one? Like, this to me is typical Nagy behavior, that he wouldn't give you a timeline that made a ton of sense.
Well, the problem with the decision as a whole is that you sort of forced yourself into having Andy as your answer as a starter going into the season, because you felt like you were a legitimate contender for things, that you thought Andy could take you to those levels. And by doing that, you tricked yourself into thinking that 2020 was meaningful and that the roster was built to contend and that you were ready to roll. And as a coach who had to fight for his job last January to convince his bosses that he still belonged in that role, you were trying to do everything possible to retain job security. Now you wasted the entirety of training camp using starters reps on a quarterback who then started, you know, the first two games for you, got injured, and then didn't make another start until Thanksgiving Day. And so the plan sort of got derailed because of that injury. It got twisted in a lot of different ways. And eventually we wound up where we all should have wound up anyway, where Justin was getting the experience and the reps to take this franchise into the future without worrying so significantly about the picture in 2021. But their lack of ability to communicate clarity, even though Matt is this guy who talks all the time about you got to over-communicate clarity, you've got to be very clear with what you mean, their inability to do that on an everyday basis creates these worlds where conspiracy theories spring up and there is no, you know, solid way to quickly debunk them, because they make you as an outsider believe that anything is possible because of all the things that consistently go wrong within the building.
So you are saying George McCaskey did not make the call to go to Justin Fields?
I am saying this the way I've said it to you on text, on the phone, on the air. I can't say it any clearer. George McCaskey did not force Matt Nagy to start Justin Fields when the Bears were 2-2 in the first week of October, you know, heading to Las Vegas. There was nothing about that is even remotely true.
I agree with Dan. Now, like, I'm
still still casting doubt.
Well, no,
on this
I mean, listen, I bet no, I mean, listen, everybody.
Look, I believe you. I'm just saying that they're like, Cap is adamant that it's the opposite,
right?
You know, and then Hub wrote
stop
that
yourself
piece.
Right there. I mean, like, how many times is Cap adamant about this?
Oh,
Cap
boy.
Was adamant that they were going to have 75.
Just lit a candle. I feel this is what I'm adamant about. George McCaskey never walked into his office, called him on the phone, did anything, and directly approached Matt Nagy and told him who to start. I feel supremely confident that that never happened. If the basis of this thesis is that George went through another vehicle, whether it was Ryan Pace or another, whatever the case may be, that I can't give you the same level of personal confidence that that didn't happen. But I can feel really, 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 really strong that there was never a personal conversation where George McCaskey said, Matt, you need to start Justin Fields, that didn't happen. Like, again, this is, I think the answer to a lot of these things is incompetence, not the nefarious things that bubble around the surface. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
they're both bad, though.
Yes.
I know what you're saying.
I'll go back to Dan. I'll go back to the whole concept. And again, and I don't get into a big argument about this either. The concept of a promised Andy Dalton, to me,
correct.
It's incompetence. It's not like they truly believed, like you just said, that Andy Dalton could get them to the playoffs and this was what was best for Justin
That's
Fields. It wasn't about what they said to Andy. Again, I believe more in incompetence than I do all of the other peripheral things.
Incompetence and miscalculations, right? And I think, look, like, you went into the year and every analyst that had taken an objective eye to this team said they're going to hover around 500. They're probably 8-9. They could squeeze their way to 9-8 if everything breaks properly. They could be a 7-10 team. They're going to be right there. I mean, go back and look at the Vegas over-under win totals for the Bears coming into the season. The outside world told you who the Bears were. Internally, the Bears thought they could win 10 or 11 games, take the next step, get into the playoffs, potentially make some noise in January. And it impacted the way they made decisions about this season that are now, you know, showing us where they are at in this current state at 4-7. And now suddenly, you know, the roster is aging. We didn't address this. We have no, you know, depth at wide receiver that we can replenish with once Allen Robinson gets out of here at the end of the year. We don't have many defensive backs that we can count on to be part of our future. We have limited salary cap space. You know, there's a lot of problems here that need to be addressed, and they're going to be a year late in addressing them because last January, Ryan and Matt got in that room, told George and Ted that they were going to collaborate and work to fix this, and they said, God darn it, let's try it.
Gosh darn it.
They did not use the Lord's name in any way, shape, or form, close to fame.
Yeah. All right. Before we let you go, I said this earlier, and I've covered, I grew up here. You grew up here too, Dan. Waddle's been a Bear since 85, of course, when he was a rookie and he won the Super Bowl. and so he knows this town. I've never seen a chant take on the life of its own as this Fire Nagy chant ever. And I've covered bad coaches. I've covered worse coaches. I've covered more inept teams than even this one.
Yes.
And I don't remember it. It is now to me a news story when there's a sporting event around Chicago and there is not a Fire Matt Nagy chant. It is no longer a news story when there is a Fire Matt Nagy chant at a sporting event that's not a Bears game because it's happening all over. Have you ever seen anything like it? And what do you make of Eddie Jackson's response?
Well, it's so awkward, right? I mean, that's the best word for it, is it's so awkward. And it's awkward in part because, as we just talked about a little bit ago, there's still six games left, including three of those inside your home stadium, right? Those chants are happening everywhere else that started originally at Soldier Field against the Ravens. And now, you know, they're going to be in there for each of the last three home games. And it's going to be incredibly awkward and a very weird vibe that those put off, right? I thought Eddie Jackson articulated himself pretty well the other day and saying, look, it's not helping. I understand long-suffering Bears fans are frustrated and they've got reason to be because they've been suffering for a long time. I don't take a lot of exception to what Eddie Jackson said. I just think that, you know, the players need to worry more about putting a better product on the field and actually producing themselves before worrying about how the fans express their frustration. But look, I mean, this is a brutal, brutal situation that they're in. I give Matt credit. You know, we've challenged Matt a lot on his coaching decisions. I give him credit for handling this as gracefully as he possibly can. But again, the bell has been rung and you're not unringing that bell, and it all leads to the same conclusion at the end. And now it's just a matter of, you know, how far those reverberations go to other parts of the building. But man, it's weird. Cause again, like, we're going to walk in there Sunday and the first time they go 3-and-out, those chants are starting.
I think the story here is that Ryan Pace is being given tremendous coverage.
People in the Twitch chat are mentioning this too. I thought of this earlier in the week. There needs to be a new chant created that includes Ted and it includes Ryan. But and someone saying the Fire Nagy chant just flows. Like, is there a way we can create a chant with Pace, Ted, and with Nagy?
I mean, you could say fire everyone. I mean, that's not too hard to get out of your mouth.
Everyone. Fire everyone. I think that's what we need to preach. I think going into Soldier Field this weekend against the Cardinals, if it goes bad, we need to tell Bears fans, instead of fire Nagy, it needs to be fire everyone.
I'll just tell you that I've been on the phone a lot in the last week plus with folks around the league, and the only remedy that anyone in the outside world sees for getting this fixed is to clean house. I mean, it comes up from every single person you talk to.
I think it's going to happen.
There's poison in the water.
Why do the people inside the building at 1920 Football Drive, why are they always the last to realize it? That's the question that I get asked all the time.
Yeah. That's a great way to end it, too. Good stuff, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you.
All right, fellas. Talk soon.
Dan Weeder, the Chicago Tribune. You heard him. Big picture stuff. And we need a new chant. Waddle's World is also coming up next.
From the First Midwest Bank State Street Studio, this is WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago, ESPN 1000. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
A few weeks ago, we didn't know if the Bears would be flexed out of Sunday night, but because Aaron Rodgers is playing MVP-level football.
Yeah, you're going to flex Aaron Rodgers out of Sunday
night? NBC's like, no, more Aaron Rodgers in his COVID toe, the better.
They may run an Aaron Rodgers Saturday practice. They're not even flex out of that.
Yeah, if Fields is hurt, maybe they just use Rodgers as the all-time quarterback.
There you go.
You play for both teams. Mike Tirico, you see him on Sunday Night Football. He was doing a game, too, over Thanksgiving. He's the voice of Notre Dame. And as you're doing all your, like, big-time national work, you're sitting there doing the Olympics this summer. You know, you get Drew Brees as your new partner. You're doing these big Notre Dame games and now talking about the vacancy. Did you ever once say, boy, I miss my guys, Waddle and Sylvie?
No. I only miss you guys. I miss Tom all the time.
Thank you, Mike.
I only miss you when I forget what game it was. Like, you know, we all have our points that, like, we just get to that limit. We can't do anything more sane. So we need to do something that's just out of the realm of normal. So just think of it, folks. When the Bears hit, like, bottom as a fan, what do? You text your friend. You call your buddy. One of the two hosts of the greatest radio show in America in the afternoons texts me to ask, do you think you're going to flex out of Sunday night if the Bears are so bad?
It was during the
Steelers.
And there's
like a moment where I grab my phone and I go, well, let me see what else is this. And then I'm like, stop it.
Not, hey, Mike, how are you? How's the family? Hope you got nice plans for the holidays.
Hey, Mike, are they going to flex the Bears out?
I think there's like a very brief nod to like the existence of a friendship. Like, hey, pal, how are you? Are you going to flex out of Sunday night? Yeah.
The old throwaway, hope you're well.
Yeah.
Right, but
right.
Boy, these Bears on national TV are an embarrassment. And are you guys thinking on Sunday Night Football of flexing them out?
Now, just wait a minute a second. So when on Sunday, when the Raiders host Washington and beat Washington, right? And then the Vikings lose and the Lions get their first win of the year. And Atlanta somehow loses to Tampa, a very likely outcome. Dallas beats New Orleans tomorrow night. Guess what's going to happen?
We're in the hunt.
The Bears are going to shock Arizona, like they did 15 years ago.
Mm.
And guess what's going to happen? The Bears are going to be tied for the last spot in the NFC. So relax. The game will have huge playoff meaning for the Bears.
When I saw that graphic,
you're in the hunt.
The Bears. I was like, in the hunt for what?
I know. We are really hunting for the last acorn left on the tree in the NFC right now. I mean, but think about it. In all seriousness, they are in the mix because I was watching the Giants game. I go, Giants 4-7-6. The Giants are going to be one game out of the last wild card spot. It's nuts, but we're going to have, especially in this 17-game season, we're probably going to have an 8-9 make it. And, you know, the way the NFC is going, that's not going to be a great team. San Francisco, though, there were five, right, guys? There were the four division leaders, Arizona, Tampa, Green Bay, Dallas, and then the Rams were the fifth. The Rams are receding a little bit,
yeah.
But San Francisco's coming on. So it feels like there are six right now, and you watched Washington, you've seen Minnesota. You feel like those teams have a chance, at least, to make it a competitive playoff game. So maybe we will get seven good teams out of it. It's obviously a stretch for the Bears to get there at this point.
Mike, why do you think that the level of play over the last four, five, 6 weeks has leveled off? I mean, the first 6 weeks are always glorious. Maybe that's just because we have such an appetite for the league to start. And then there's like this law. I really, as down as I've been on the overall play of the league over the last several weeks, I think this is just that a law. And I think they're going to sprint to the finish line. Why is it that we experience this?
Tom, maybe it's the 17 weeks. You know, maybe it's the length of the season. Maybe it's the offenses start out so far ahead. Right, it feels like the first month of the season, is like Big 12 circa 2017, where it's up and down the field, up and down the field. This quarterback's on this record pace. And then the defense is, maybe it's the lack of hitting that's done in the preseason. Maybe it's the defense is figuring out game plans. The defenses have really ruled from maybe week five until last week, and they've become tighter, low-scoring games. And I think we've become so spoiled with good offense that we're missing it a little bit right now. And that brings teams that don't have that offensive talent back in the mix. I'll throw one other thing in there. I think people have figured out with the young quarterbacks right now, let's play them with two safeties. Let's make them go 12, 13 plays down the field, and we'll mess them up somehow. I think we saw that with Mahomes. I think we've seen that with Josh Allen. And I think the teams that have two good safeties and are disciplined about two or even three safety defenses, and they're dropping three, and it doesn't necessarily have to be three safeties, I think they're forcing teams to go down the field. And in those congested areas, these young quarterbacks are having a hard time with accuracies and just get the first down and third and five and move the chain. So I think that might spill into that. I'm with you. I think we're going to see those elite teams starting right about now to separate here a little bit, getting healthy. We've got a stretch run. We can smell a one seed or a division in a home playoff game. So I think you're right about that.
Mike Tirico joining us on the Corona Hotline. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. So let this be the first of 1,000 times that we're going to ask you about Justin Fields. What do you see so far, Mike?
It's going to be there at some point, just not right now. I mean, it will get there. There have been wow moments, and there have been moments that you go, you know what, he's just not ready. But I can say that about a lot of the young quarterbacks in the NFL. I think Matt Nagy had the – and Matt's been beaten up by too many folks. I think it was the right kind of approach. Look, the guy's not ready to take over the whole deal, and I think we've seen that at times. And Andy Dalton does give you chances to win games. So, you know, are we sacrificial lambing it as the head coach and we're preparing – this, we're going to let the rookie quarterback take his lumps, and I can turn over a guy who's figured it out a little bit to the next guy? Or do you fight in there and win games? Now, injury has taken some of that out of his hands because it's been play the healthy guy. It'll be Fields when he's ready. At moments, you've seen a quarterback who can do some eye-opening things. So there's encouragement with that part of the equation. Now, Arizona, Green Bay, Minnesota, three of the next games, three in a row, are against really good defenses. Defenses that can give you problems, defenses that can give you confusion. So is Andy Dalton the better quarterback to win some of those games? He might be, but you want to see Fields going forward. I like the excitement. I like the wow factor. I like when a guy gets out of a jam and makes a big play, because that's what you need. This league is so good. I just think he's not all the way there yet. And it's going to be some growing pains for the next 6 weeks and highlights and frustrating moments for sure.
On the topic of rookie quarterbacks, what do you make of what Mac Jones is doing in New England? Is that as much to do with time and place in the group that he has helping him? Or is it, you know, strictly Mac Jones is a really, really good rookie quarterback?
I think it's both. It might just be time and place from his last place. You know, we're at Alabama and we all gave the kudos to the great talent around him and all of that. And after a while, he could, well, the quarterback's pretty good, too. And in that system, he was asked to do a lot of the things that he's doing in the NFL. That's make choices, flip the run game, some of those reads. You know, at Ohio State, Justin, we know he was not asked to do as much of that. Yeah. So I think the assimilation into the NFL style of play has been a little bit easier. And Belichick early on gave him the opportunity in camp to show that, and he did. So it was, let's go forward and do it. And he's doing it. Now, the fact that he's continuing to do it is very impressive to me. I love his demeanor. Now, he did trademark MJ10 today.
I
was like, oh, I don't know. Maybe MJ. Maybe I'd go for something else. Maybe I'd go for Mac 10 or something like that. But there's a good cast around him. Their spend in free agency was fabulous. It was smart. It was very sensible. So I think the surrounds that he had, plus the system he came out of, gave him the chance to do what he's doing compared to Wilson with the Jets and Fields with the Bears.
You know, Michael Jordan and his people have already sued him. Like, this thing hasn't even been sent to the patent lawyers.
He's been number 10,
yeah,
right?
Like, it doesn't matter. It's, yeah, like, you put MJ in anything and I'm coming after your ass. That's what I'm going to do.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Yeah.
You know, 15 years ago, you made the reference of the Cardinals-Bears game, Monday Night Football. You had the call. And the way this sort of, I remember this on the day that we were having you on. The Cardinals are unveiling like a 15-minute episode. They're doing these episodes, I guess, online every week from their franchise on their most memorable games. And, and tonight, I believe, there's a 15-minute special on the Arizona Cardinals that they put together on that game. And the outburst specifically on Denny Green. And I think it's called Thanks Coach from the PR guy saying thanks coach after he had the whole, you want to crown him, we'll crown him. And what do you remember about that night and where does that fit in for most memorable fourth quarters?
It's so funny. Well, Mark Dalton's a PR guy and he's still there. He's one of the best ones in the league. You know, there's so much going on in that game. Leinart in the game. There's a million different things that happened in the game, right? But one of the big headlines of the game for me was the production meeting. I still have the legal pad somewhere here in the house from that production meeting. Hmm. And in that production meeting, Denny Green is telling us about the Bears' preseason game against the Cardinals. They played that preseason, and Denny was surprised that the Chicago media was making out the Bears undefeated at the time. Could they be the 85 Bears? Could they be that dominant defense? And Denny said, no, they're not. And he was really animated about it. And that's where the whole you want to crown them came from. He's like, he said to us in the meeting, it's me, Kornheiser, Theismann, Susie Kalber, Michelle Tafoya. That's our group doing Monday night in 06. And Denny's like, you know, they want to crown these guys. They crown them. You can't crown them like champions. You can't crown them as the 85 Bears. They're not the 85 Bears. We played them our good against their good in the preseason, and we hung with them. I know the 85 Bears. That's a great team. This is not the 85 Bears. So when he goes in the press conference and pounds the table, that becomes the Coors Light commercial. But you want to crown them? Crown them. But we had them, and we let them off the hook. That's what he was referring to, if you want to crown them. Yeah. And I have that legal pad That's somewhere amazing. In the stomach. I'm a hoarder. I keep my game stuff. And every time I saw that commercial, I laughed because I felt like we saw the first thought that he had of you want to crown him, and then it came out in the press conference.
That's awesome. That's priceless. That's such a good story.
Hey, Mike, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about what has transpired recently with Brian Kelly leaving for LSU. What do you make of not just that situation? We know Brian was there for 12 years, but also Lincoln Riley leaving and just the overall college landscape with regard to coaches taking off and picking up and going to different places.
I could take the whole hour. I won't. I'm going to give you three things on this. I'll try to make them brief. And the last one is I'm going after the College Football Playoff Committee. So hang on for a minute that. 5 years doing the Notre Dame games, got some 6 years, five full seasons, got to know Brian really well. Brian just built a new house a mile from the stadium. It's a beautiful house. I didn't think he was going to leave. I'm a bit surprised that he left. If you think about Brian Kelly's career, where has he coached? D2, Grand Valley State, Central Michigan, Cincinnati, Notre Dame. What do all those have in common? None are in one of the big conferences, the Big Ten, the SEC, the Pac-12, et cetera. I think the money plus the opportunity to coach in one of the biggest conferences and a chance to win a championship and do a fifth rebuild. He's done four rebuilds. This would be a fifth. I think that's what appealed to him. I'm still surprised. As for the timing, this is the fault of moving up this signing day. And here's what I mean by that. They moved the signing day up to December so the guys could sign early, so they didn't have to wait till February and go through the whole holidays with the uncertainty. Trying to do a solid for the high school players. What does that do? That fast forwards every college coaching decision, because you want to have a coach in place who can recruit for 2 weeks to bring in a good class. So that's why we've seen more than ever guys get fired during the season. So while there was good intent for the high school players, what it's done is it's forced more early firings in college football and ruined the seasons and the experience for the student athletes at the schools where they let the USC coach go early, and then these schools who are waiting for the playoff. Otherwise, this wouldn't be happening with this set of timing. So another set of the NCAA not really seeing what was going on. And if you just give me 30 seconds, the fact that the head of the committee for the CFP last night said that Notre Dame could be impacted by Brian Kelly not being the coach, I'd like those guys to pick every game going forward because they can tell me what a head coach will be able to do impact wise on a team. If those people on that committee ever say that they are all about the student athletes and their experience and fairness to them, and they keep Notre Dame out because they're uncertain about the head coaching situation, then they're fraudulent.
Think of this, Mike. Let me just I said this earlier. What if Kirby Smart just says tomorrow, hey, you know what? I want to go coach Appalachian State. You know what? I'm going to leave.
Right.
You think that the committee is going to move Georgia out of the number one spot or think any less of them or move them down because the coach left?
No, not for a second. This whole system is awful. It's atrocious. I'm kind of rooting for Alabama and Georgia and Cincinnati and Oklahoma State to get in. So three of the Power Five conferences are not represented. So that'll fast forward change. And everyone goes, oh, wait, this is a great system. Oh, wait, there's one Power Five, the Big 12, two Power Fives, and then the American. And the ACC and the Big Ten, we're all going to go home. You know, that's not going to happen. Michigan's going to get in. But an Iowa upset would need to happen. But you get my point.
Yeah.
The system's so screwy, but you cannot sit there and give us the whole, it's all about the student athletes. And I believe that those guys believe that because I see athletic directors and talk to them all the time. They do care about their welfare. But to penalize the Notre Dame players because Brian Kelly has left and you have no idea who their coach is going to be, that is fraudulent in your thinking if you're telling me that you are pro the student athletes' welfare. I'm sorry.
It's a mic drop right there. Yep. Yeah. That's good stuff. Mike, we always appreciate the time. Thank you. And I will deliver one of those untimely texts to you soon.
I can't wait. I can't wait. They make my day. They make my day. So glad you guys are well. We don't talk between now and then. Happy Hanukkah. Happy holidays. And all the best to all your listeners. We love you guys.
Yeah. Love
you,
too.
Mike.
Thanks,
appreciate
Mike.
It.
There he is. He's the best. We've always had a great relationship with Mike Tirico, Sunday Night Football, voice
Commissioner
of Notre
of Sports.
Dame. Commissioner of Sports. He's always smart that way. If you want to react to anything you heard, 312-332-3776 or baseball rumors we got to address, and we'll take your phone calls coming up.